All right, good afternoon. My name is Diana Bagnell, and I'm from Texas A&M, so now we're going to zoom out a little bit and talk about some interdisciplinary work that I'm doing with a team there. And we're interested in translating these things that we can measure to benefits for stakeholders both on the farm and off the farm. If you read my abstract, come back in a year, and maybe I'll have some of that done, but economists think everything is a bad idea, and sociologists think everything is a good idea. So I'll show you what we've done so far. We're working under this framework of soil security, which is a pretty simple concept that we believe soil security is foundational for other global existential crises that we're facing. And there are five dimensions to this concept. The first is that we consider a soil's capability. These are the inherent properties, like texture, that are very difficult to change. The second is the soil's condition. This is the soil health aspect, and so that's kind of the tie-in here. These are manageable properties. The third is that we need to understand the sociological context that our soil resides in. That's the soil connectivity dimension. Fourth, we also have to understand the economic context. That is the soil capital dimension. And then fifth, we have to consider the policy situation that this soil may be in. Now, the team that we've put together at Texas A&M is working on a bit of seed funding, and I'm being trained under a soil physicist and also under a natural resource economist and a rural sociologist. And so we hit those first four dimensions, and we want some maturity in those before we move on to codification. So my title had the term linking indicators in it, and I want to talk about what we are calling a linking indicator. We're interested in a subset of biophysical indicators, and we want them to clearly and directly matter to their target audience. We don't propose a global set of indicators. And we're doing this because we want to motivate people, and so we want to be able to present values that they can experience. The ecosystem service literature has a lot of dollar values, values in pounds and yen, and yet those numbers often don't manifest themselves for real people in real places, and we'd like to be a bit more tangible than that in our work. And we know that not all values are captured in markets. Certainly economics matters, but there are other things we can use to make decisions, and so we want to include these biophysical non-market values as well. And we need to step back and consider that if we get our indicators wrong, then we cannot possibly get the estimate of value right. The producers that I rode around with this summer were not very interested in saturated hydraulic conductivity, but they really did care about how many inches more of water they might capture on their land. So finding linking indicators can be a bit of a challenge. We think there'll be a regional or local approach to that. So our team has begun in this Brazos River Basin in the state of Texas. The first step is just that, to define an area of interest. And secondly, we have to determine the candidate soil ecosystem services. So what are the capabilities of the soils in this region? What can they do? And then we need to pair that with what people want. So that's where we match our soil ecosystem services with stakeholder demand. If you look in literature about ecosystem services, you will find a great deal about the supply or the provision of ecosystem services, and not a whole lot about how much folks actually would like to have. And once we've done those other two steps right there, we have to be able to quantitatively, functionally link these with soil measures and model outputs. We have to be able to understand the capabilities and conditions of our soil, link those to the things that people desire with soils, models, and measurements. And lastly, we need to decide which indicators we should be using to convey that value to stakeholders. So again, we're on a bit of seed funding, but we hit the ground running to try and find out from our sociology side what people cared about in this region. And we found that sedimentation was an issue. It was filling up reservoirs faster than they had anticipated, and so the Brazos River Authority is worried about that. Additionally, sedimentation is impacting animal species, including some animals that are or soon will be on the endangered species list, so the threat of regulation looms large there. And then there are animals just like fish sought by anglers that people are also concerned about. Excess nutrients and contaminants like pesticides are a problem. And finally, certainly in Texas, our ability to handle floodwaters is something that we're thinking a lot about recently. So we could attack any of these problems, and certainly there are more that we hadn't found in this kind of cursory work. But our economics team found a lot of data on this issue of fish sought by anglers. So now we're going to go from the sociology work to the handoff that they were able to do to our economics team. And what they're doing is taking large open access databases that include water quality all along that Brazos River corridor. And these are a few measurements that I've listed here. They're just representative. There are hundreds of indicators across time and at different sites that they're looking at. And additionally, they have been able to develop the probability that an angler may use a particular site, and they've done that independently with survey data at different sites along the Brazos River. And the goal here is to search for relationships between these water quality indicators and the probability of an angler using that site. Now, once that's done, they would then hand that off to us, and it would be our job as soil scientists to functionally link that to soil management practices, and we'll get to that in just a moment. It's useful to mention that we could find several different things when this analysis is finished, and hopefully it'll be finished sometime next month. But we could find linking indicators. We could find biophysical things that producers or that even the anglers may be using to decide where they're going to engage in these fishing activities. We also might be able to provide some really interesting information to the communities that support these locations when we do a travel cost valuation method. In other words, we understand how much these anglers are spending when they go to a location, how much the local economy will be harmed by them no longer doing so, because that's dependent upon linking soil management to the water quality issues, linking that to angler probability of using a site. So that's some potential outcomes, which hopefully we'll report on at some future date. But even though we don't have that outcome, we just love to dig holes and go out and do things. So our soil science team got out this summer, and we took some data. I have just a little tiny bit to show you to discuss today. What you see here is saturated hydraulic conductivity across three different management systems for at a USDA site in Riesel, Texas. And so this is a constant head measurement, very small n. Each of those bars only represents three rings. And so you see the standard error of the mean bar. But we're kind of encouraged. We see some differences with management. So this is a soil condition consideration. That's encouraging. Right next to it, I have another saturated hydraulic conductivity measure. This is a falling head method that was taken right before the constant head method in exactly the same ring. It was undisturbed between the two measurements. And so there's a couple things to point out. One, we do see some differences in absolute values. Fortunately, the ranking has stayed the same. We also see differences, and if you look at those standard error of the mean bars, we see higher standard errors in the falling head. And so we need to decide as scientists which one of these might we prefer. And that's a connectivity issue. That's a stakeholder issue. If I'm going to do this as model input, I much prefer the constant head method. I enjoy it. It's easier for me to do. It's more simple for me to know when I've gotten the right number. But the falling head method was just always fascinating to farmers. We would ride around. They wanted to come see it. They wanted to see their neighbor's farm. They wanted to ride with me to their neighbor's farm and make fun of their neighbor. It really resonated with them. And, of course, this is not new. NRCS has done simple falling head examples for a long time. And I point this out just to say that we have to start asking ourselves these questions when we begin to decide on which measurement we want to use. So the other measurement that I have here is kind of hopefully a model input to answer a question that kind of came at the end of Dr. Lin's talk. How do we measure and model soil health? Well, this might be one way. This is not my work. I encourage you to go see Sarah Vaughn at poster 1108 tomorrow from 3 to 4:30. But what we have here is the same rings that you just saw, those different three management systems. This is the same field, these are the same sites, and this is a 25-centimeter three-dimensional scan of each of those fields. So we're able to see from that we have changes with the conventional till. We have the lowest KSAT, that's the constant head that you saw a minute ago, so nothing new there. But at the bottom there, we have that number units. Well, those units are structural units that have been pulled out of these images from an algorithm developed at the University of Sydney in Australia, which we're working with. And so they're analyzing the structure of these, and hopefully one day we can develop ways to really take a mathematical view of soil structure and include that there is indeed soil structural change, and if you notice, it ranks along with the saturated hydraulic conductivity, increasing from the lowest of the conventional till to the highest in the perennial system, with no-till being in between there. So that's an encouraging result for us. So if we were to complete all of these steps correctly and get it all done, then we're left with deciding what to report. And again, we have to think about this in terms of the stakeholders that we are interested in. And there are some examples there. But for our region of interest, we have some sociological work to do at the end of this project to decide which indicators to use. And we do know the methods that we need to begin with. We have to start with interviews, just like the ones that you kind of saw earlier about sedimentation and concerns with animal species. From the interviews, we will move to focus groups. This is a process of getting people who are interested in these things together, whether it be producers or off-site users of soil ecosystem services. They may not even know they're users of soil ecosystem services. Probably they don't. But in those focus groups, we'll be allowed to develop surveys, and that's where we can actually go out and really test whether or not the indicators we've chosen matter to people. We might have several indicators that really describe the same soil function if a soil scientist were to look at it, but we can see how people respond differently to those values. So with that, I'm going to breeze past these references. This is the field that we worked in this summer. There's my rings and Sarah's pits right there, and I have confidence that no question you can ask will be as irritating as the chiggers we got every time we went here.
Time for a couple questions.
How old is the no-till management on that field? I believe it was 7 years.
You mentioned, yeah, farmers aren't really interested in KSAT. Are there other, I guess, indicators that could be linked to that might be more of interest?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see, for some of these regional things, just a difference in infiltration, and then we could kind of map out a common rainfall pattern maybe in that area and figure out how many inches during the season we might get. I think that would be something that a farmer would be interested in, especially the timing of that rainfall. That's really important to us. So not just the number over the year, but when might we receive that rainfall and how much more could we capture at that time.
So if that's the case, is the choice of method then fairly important if you're getting 40 centimeters per day versus 10?
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's his point was he was asking whether or not the choice of method. Yeah, we definitely want to get as correct as we can in those cases when we're looking at modeling like that. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so the question is, how could we translate uncertainty? I think that most of these folks deal with uncertainty in their business a lot. I think it'd be really stakeholder dependent if you're asking how might we do that. Certainly, if we're talking maybe about a water quality concern, maybe they're concerned about that sediment and we're talking with a wastewater treatment plan. Well, they really need to know whether or not we can get to the parts per million contaminant that they're interested in. I mean, in that sense, I think you'd have to have a simple plus or minus or confidence interval. Maybe that doesn't work that well with a farmer, but an example of some different years and what they might expect over, say, 5 years, getting some five-year averages, they're comfortable with that. They work on five-year averages for farm bill issues anyway, so I think they could do that.
Have you gotten any feedback from stakeholders so far?
So, he's asking if we've gotten feedback from stakeholders. A lot of that's in the social realm, so I spent a lot of time with one guy who went to no-till and asked, why did you do it? And he said, well, because I'm a cattleman, and it doesn't bother me to not till a lot, but my neighbor won't because he's always tilled. And so the social factors are really strong here. And so I think we have a lot of work to do in the social sciences to understand what we're up against on that front.